killer on the loose. There was not one part of the city this crime didn't touch, from the mayor's office to the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Will had seen these stories spin out of control before. Every salacious detail would be discussed and analyzed. Rumors would be fed into the machine and regurgitated as fact. The obvious questions would be asked: who did he kill? Why was he released? The Sunshine Law would be invoked. Files would be photocopied and couriered, and Sam Lawson, Faith's ex, who worked at the newspaper, would probably be on CNN before night fell. "Crap," Faith mumbled, nosing her Mini up to the police barricade. The car shook as reporters jockeyed for position. She flashed her badge at the cop on duty. "The BMW, too," Faith told him, pointing to Sarah's car behind them. The cop made a note on his clipboard, then pushed his way through the crowd to lift the barricade. A reporter knocked on Faith's window. She mumbled, "Asshole," as she rolled the car forward. She hadn't said much on the ride over. Will didn't know if that was because she didn't know what to say, or because Amanda was playing her usual game of hide the details. Another body. Same M.O. His father, nowhere to be found. The new victim was a prostitute. Will knew this with absolute certainty. It was his father's pattern. First a student, then a working girl. He didn't get rid of one unless he had another to take her place. Will turned around to check for Sarah. The BMW followed them inside the barricade. His Sig Sauer was still under her front seat. She wasn't going to stop him this time. Amanda could put 50 guards on Will, and he'd still grab the gun and find his father and shoot him in the head. Exactly as he should have done last night, this morning, last week. So many opportunities missed. His father had lived in this hotel for 2 months, and he'd somehow managed to come and go with no one being the wiser. He'd managed to abduct 2 girls. He'd managed to dump one at Techwood and murder another one in his hotel room. All while the police, hotel security, and undercover agents were supposedly watching his every move. If that bastard could give them the slip, then so could Will. He was nothing if not his father's son. Faith jerked up the handbrake as she parked behind Amanda's G-Ride. Will got out of the car. Sarah's BMW stopped in front of 2 Atlanta police cruisers. There were just as many cops on scene as reporters. He had to push past 2 uniformed patrolmen to open Sarah's door for her. The cameras flashed as she got out of the car. She crossed her arms self-consciously. She was dressed in her yoga pants and his shirt. Hardly work attire. Will took the opportunity to reach in behind her and retrieve his gun from under the seat. Except the gun wasn't there. When he looked up, Sarah was staring at him.
"Dr. Linton," Amanda said. "Thank you for coming."
Sarah shut the car door. She locked it with a key fob, which she put in her shirt pocket. "Is Pete on the way?"
"No, he's testifying in court this morning."
Amanda motioned for them to follow her inside.
"I appreciate your coming on such short notice. It would behoove us all to get this body quickly removed."
A patrolman opened the side door. There was a whoosh as the air pressure changed. Will had never been inside the hotel before. The lobby was opulent in its excesses. Every surface was a different color of marble. A large staircase dominated the center of the room, splitting into 2 opposite sides as it reached the 2nd floor. The treads were carpeted, the handrails were polished brass. The chandelier overhead looked as if a crystal factory had exploded. The setting would have been impressive, but for the fact that every shade and variety of police officer filled the lobby. Plainclothes division, uniformed patrol, special agents from the GBI, even a couple of women from Vice were there, their gold detective shields looking incongruous against their skimpy attire. Amanda told Faith,
Security is pulling footage from the last 24 hours. I need you to expedite that.
Faith nodded, heading toward the front desk. Sarah asked, Have you identified the victim?
Yes, Amanda motioned over Jamal Hodge. Detective, if you could please clear out all but the bare minimum of your people.
Yes, ma'am.
He walked over to the crowd and raised his arms for attention. Will tuned out the man. He watched Amanda instead. She adjusted the sling on her shoulder as she gave orders to one of the hotel rent-a-cops. Sarah asked, What is it? Will didn't answer. He scanned the lobby, trying to find a senior Atlanta police officer. No Leo Donnelly. No Mike Geary, the captain in charge of this zone. Amanda took over the case, Will realized. It didn't make sense. As far as the Atlanta Police Department knew, a dead prostitute had nothing to do with a kidnapped student. He asked Amanda,
What happened?
Amanda indicated the rent-a-cop. He was in an expensive-looking charcoal suit, but the radio in his hand gave him away.
This is Bob McGuire, head of hotel security. He called it in.
Will shook the man's hand. McGuire was too young to be a retired cop, but he seemed fairly collected considering what had fallen into his lap. He led them toward the elevator, saying,
I got the call from the kitchen this morning. The room service girl said that he wasn't responding to her knock.
Amanda explained,
He's been adhering to a regular schedule.
The elevator doors opened. Will stood back to let Sarah and Amanda on first. McGuire said,
He's been staying here for 2 months.
He waved a key card over the panel, then pressed the button for the 19th floor.
We can track his movements in and out of the room through the software on the door lock. His schedule's been roughly the same since he got here. Room service at 6 in the morning, then the gym, then he goes back to his room. Then he orders room service at noon.
He tucked his hands into his pockets.
Once or twice a week, he uses our restaurant for dinner, or eats at the bar. Most nights, he orders room service at 6 o'clock. Then we don't hear from him until 6 the next morning.
Amanda noted.
He's keeping to his prison schedule.
Will glanced around the elevator car. The security camera was tucked into the corner.
How long have you been watching him?
Officially? McGuire asked.
Just a few days.
He told Amanda.
Your people have been doing most of the heavy lifting, but my folks have supplemented.
Unofficially, Will asked.
Since he's checked in. He's a strange man, very off-putting physically. He never did anything overt, but he made people uncomfortable. And frankly, the presidential suite is $4,000 a night. We normally try to find out who our higher-end clients are. I did a little poking around and realized that we needed to keep a closer eye on him.
Amanda asked,
Did anyone talk to him? Socialize with him?
As I said, he was off-putting. The hotel staff avoided him whenever possible. We never let the maids go up alone.
What about other guests?
No one mentioned anything.
Will asked,
How did he pay for the room?
The man had been in prison. He wouldn't have a credit card.
McGuire explained, His bank arranged everything. We're holding a $100,000 deposit against the room.
A bell dinged. The doors opened. Will stepped aside, then followed them out of the elevator. Sarah held his gaze for a few seconds. He nodded for her to go ahead of him. McGuire said,
There are 5 other suites on his floor. The presidential is in the corner. It's around 2,200 square feet.
3 uniformed Atlanta police officers stood at the end of the hallway. They were at least 50 feet away. The red exit sign glowed over their heads. The suite was directly across from the stairs. McGuire led them down the hall.
3 of the suites were occupied. Entertainers, there's a concert in town. We arranged for them to be moved to our sister property. I can give you their information, but...
Amanda said, I'd rather not waste time talking with lawyers.
Will felt a pain in his jaw, running down his neck. His teeth were clamped together. His shoulders tensed. He could hear his own breathing over the music. The thick carpet was soft under his shoes.
The walls were painted a deep brown that made the long hallway feel like a tunnel. Chandeliers hung at even intervals. There was a room service cart beside a closed door. No number on the room. The suites were probably the equivalent of 3 or 4 rooms. In movies, they always had jacuzzi tubs and bathrooms the size of Will's house. She wouldn't be in the tub. She wouldn't be in the bathroom. She would be on the mattress. She would be pinned down like a specimen in a science project. Another victim. Another woman whose life was over because of a man whose DNA roiled inside of Will. He had never stayed in a hotel suite before. He had never run on a beach. He had never flown in an airplane. He had never brought home a school report and watched his mother smile. The clay ashtray he'd made in kindergarten had been one of 16 Mrs. Flanagan received on Mother's Day. All the Christmas gifts under the tree were labeled "for a girl" or "for a boy." The evening Will graduated high school, he'd looked out at the crowd of cheering families and seen only strangers. Amanda stopped a few feet from the uniformed officers.
"Dr. Linton, perhaps you should stay out in the hall for a moment."
Sarah nodded her acquiescence, but Will asked, "Why?" Amanda stared up at him. She looked worse than she had the day before. Dark circles rimmed her eyes. Her lipstick was smeared.
"All right."
For once, Amanda didn't argue. She continued down the hallway. The cops looked bored with their assignment. Their thumbs were looped through their heavy utility belts. They stood with their legs wide apart to keep their backs from breaking under the weight of their equipment.
"Mimi," Amanda said to the female officer, "how's your Aunt Pam?"
"Hating retirement." She indicated the room. "No one's been in or out." Amanda waited for McGuire to open the door with his key card. The green light flashed. There was a clicking sound. He held open the door. Sarah and Amanda walked in. Then Will.
McGuire said, "I'll be in the hall if you need me."
There was a metal latch on the door jamb. He swung it out to catch the door and keep it from locking.
"Well," Amanda said.
They stood in the foyer, looking into a room that was larger than Will's entire house. The curtains were open, sunlight streamed in. The corner unit offered a panoramic view of Midtown. The Equitable Building, Georgia Power, the Westin Peachtree Plaza, and, in the distance, Techwood. 2 couches and 4 chairs were arranged around a 52-inch flat-screen television. DVD player, VCR, CD player. There was a galley kitchen, a wet bar, dining room seating for 10, a large desk with an air-on chair, a half-bath with a telephone mounted on the wall. The toilet paper was folded into a rose. The faucet was a gold-plated swan, its mouth opened to release a stream of water as soon as its wings were turned.
"This way," Amanda said.
The door to the bedroom was half-closed. She used her foot to push it the rest of the way open. Will breathed through his mouth. He expected to smell the familiar, metallic scent of blood. He expected to find a thin blonde girl with vacant eyes and perfect fingernails. What he found instead was his father. Will's knees buckled. Sarah tried to hold him up, but she wasn't strong enough. He slumped against the door. There was no sound in the room. Amanda's mouth was moving. Sarah was trying to tell him something, but his ears wouldn't work. His lungs wouldn't work. His vision skewed. Everything took on a red tone, as if he was looking at the world through a veil of blood. The carpet was red. The curtains. The sun coming through the windows. It was all red. Except for his father. He was on the bed, lying on his back, hands clasped together on his chest. He had died in his sleep. Will screamed in rage. He kicked the door, crushing the handle into the wall. He grabbed the floor lamp and threw it across the room. Someone tried to stop him, McGuire. Will punched him in the face. And then he collapsed to the floor as a baton pounded against the back of his knees. Two cops were on top of him, three. Will's face was pushed into the carpet. A strong hand kept it there as his arm was wrenched around, a handcuff clamped around his wrist.
"Don't you dare!" Sarah yelled. "Stop!"
Her words were like a slap. Will felt his senses come back. He realized what he was doing, that he had been completely and totally out of control, and that Sarah had seen it all.
"Officers!" Amanda's tone held a steely warning. "Let him go. Immediately."
Will stopped struggling. He felt some of the pressure lessen. The female cop leaned down so that Will could see her face. "Mimi." She asked, "Are we gonna be okay?" Will nodded. The key clicked into the handcuffs. His arm was freed. Slowly, they all climbed off him. Will didn't stand immediately. He turned his head to the carpet. He pressed his palms flat to the floor. He sat back on his heels. He was breathless. The sound of his blood pounded in his ears.
"Asshole." Bob McGuire's hand covered his nose. Blood seeped between his fingers. Amanda said, "Mr. McGuire, I hope you'll excuse us."
The man looked like he would prefer to kick Will in the teeth. Mimi offered, "I'll get you some ice." She put her hand to McGuire's elbow and escorted him from the room. The two other cops followed.
"Well..."
Amanda let out a long sigh.
"Dr. Linton, can you estimate time of death?"
Sarah didn't move. She was looking at Will. She wasn't mad. She wasn't disgusted. There was a slight tremor to her body. He could tell she wanted to help him, longed to help him. That she did not made him love her with a piercing clarity. Will pushed his hands to the floor. He stood up. He straightened his jacket. Amanda said,
"The last time anyone saw him was approximately 7 last night. He called room service to remove his tray. He put the breakfast card on the door."
Room service. Penthouse suites. Dying peacefully in his sleep.
"Dr. Linton," Amanda said, "time of death would be very helpful."
Sarah was shaking her head even before Amanda finished her request. "I don't have the proper tools. I can't move the body until it's photographed. I don't even have gloves." Amanda unzipped her purse.
"The thermostat was set on 70 when the first unit arrived."
She offered Sarah a pair of surgical gloves.
"I'm sure you can give us something."
Sarah looked at Will again. He realized that she was waiting for his permission. He nodded, and she took the gloves. Her face changed as she walked over to the bed. He'd seen this happen many times before. She was good at her job, good at separating who she was from what she had to do. Will had witnessed enough preliminary exams to know what Sarah was thinking. She noted the position of the body. He was lying prone on the mattress. She noted that the sheet and bedspread were neatly folded down at the foot of the bed. She noted that the victim was dressed in a white, short-sleeved t-shirt and white boxer shorts, and that beside him on the table was a black velvet manicure kit. The tools were neatly laid out: nail clippers, a tiny pair of scissors, nail buffer, three types of metal files, an emery board, tweezers, a clear glass vial that held the white, crescent-shaped clippings of his father's fingernails. Will had never seen the man in the flesh. His mugshot photo showed swollen features marred by dark bruises. Months after his arrest, a newspaper photographer had managed to snap a blurred image of him leaving the courthouse in shackles. Those were the only two photos Will knew of. There was no background information in his file. No one knew where he was from. No friends came forward, no parents. No neighbors claimed that he had always seemed so normal. The AJC had been two newspapers back then, the Atlanta Journal and the Atlanta Constitution. Both editions covered the court proceedings, but there was no trial. His father had pleaded guilty to kidnapping, torture, rape, and murder. With the death penalty rendered illegal by the Supreme Court, the only enticement the prosecutor could offer in exchange for not having to prove his case at trial was life with the possibility of parole. That everyone assumed that possibility would never roll around was understood. So, in the scheme of things, Will supposed his father was lucky. Lucky to miss the ultimate punishment. Lucky the parole board finally released him. Lucky to die on his own terms. Lucky to kill one last time. Sarah began the examination with his face. That was where rigor always started. She tested the laxity of the jaw, pressed against the closed eyelids and mouth. Next, she checked the fingers, flexed the wrist. The nails glinted in the sunlight. They were trimmed down to the quick. The cuticle on his thumb had bled before he died. Sarah said, "My best guess, and it's only a guess, is that he died sometime within the last 6 hours." Amanda didn't let her off that easily. "Care to hazard a cause of death?" "Not really. Could be a heart attack. Could be cyanide. I won't know until I get him on the table." "Surely there's something else you can tell me about him." Sarah was visibly annoyed by the question. Still, she answered, "He's in his mid to late 60s. He's well nourished, in good shape. His muscle tone is appreciative, even in rigor. His teeth are false, obviously penal system quality. He has what looks like a scar on his chest. You can see it in the V-neck of his undershirt. It looks surgical."
"He had a heart attack a few years ago," Amanda frowned. "Unfortunately, they managed to save him."
"That might explain the trach scar on his neck." She indicated the metal bracelet on his wrist. "He's diabetic. I'm not going to move his clothes until after he's photographed, but I imagine we'll find injection sites on his abdomen and legs." She took off the gloves. "Is there anything else?" Faith stood in the doorway. "I have something." She had a computer disk in her hand. She wouldn't look at Will, which told him that the victim's identity came as no surprise. She was a better liar than he'd thought. Or maybe not. At least he understood why she'd been so quiet on the drive over. Amanda said,
"We can watch it in the other room."
The three of them stood in a half circle as they waited for Faith to load the DVD player. Amanda was between Will and Sarah. She took her BlackBerry out of her purse. Will thought at first that she was reading her emails, but it was easy to look over her shoulder. The screen was shattered like a spiderweb. He recognized the news site. Amanda read the headline,
"Recently paroled con dies in Midtown hotel room."
They were hoping for somebody famous. Faith picked up the remote control. Idiots.
"The story isn't dead yet."
Amanda kept scrolling.
"Apparently, a hotel employee tipped them off to a heavy police presence over the last few days," she told Will. "This is why we try to make friends."
"Here we go." Faith pointed the remote at the player. The security camera showed an empty hotel elevator. The recording was in color. Will recognized the gold inlaid tile on the floor of the car. Faith fast-forwarded through the video, saying, "Sorry, it's not cued." The lights on the elevator panel flashed, indicating the car was moving down to the lobby. Faith slowed the recording when the doors opened. A woman got onto the elevator. She was thin and tall, with long blonde hair and a floppy white hat. She kept her head down as she entered the car. The hat brim covered most of her face. Just her chin showed before she turned around. "Working girl," Faith provided. Hotel security doesn't know her name, but she's been here before. They recognize the hat. Will checked the timestamp. 22:14:12. He'd been sleeping on the couch with Sarah.
She has a key card,
Amanda said, just as the woman swiped the card across the pad, the same as Bob McGuire had done. She pressed the button for the 19th floor. The doors closed. The woman faced the front of the car, showing the security camera the top of her hat, the back of her slinky, matching white dress. The elevator doors were solid wood. There was no mirrored reflection.
Amanda asked, "Did the lobby cameras pick up her face?"
"No," Faith said. "She's a pro. She knew where the cameras were." The woman got off the elevator. The doors closed. The car was empty again. She stayed up here for half an hour before coming down again. I checked with APD Vice. They say that's about the right amount of time.
Amanda said, "She's lucky she got away with her life."
Faith fast-forwarded the video again, then slowed it when the elevator doors opened. The woman entered the same as before, head tilted down, hat covering her face. She didn't need the key card to go to the lobby. Her finger pressed the button. Again, she faced the doors. But this time, she reached up and adjusted her hat. Will said,
"Her fingernails weren't painted before."
"Exactly," Faith agreed. "I checked it 4 times before I came up here." Will stared at the woman's hands. The nails were painted red, undoubtedly in Bombshell Max Factor Ultra Lucent. According to the crime scene report, it was his father's preferred color. Will said,
"There's no nail polish by the bed, just manicure stuff."
Faith suggested, "Maybe she brought her own?"
"That doesn't seem likely,"
Amanda told them.
"He liked to control things."
Sarah offered, "I'll check the other room."
Amanda told Faith, "Security says the girl's been in the hotel before. I want you to comb every second of video they have. Her face has to be on camera somewhere."
Faith left the room. Amanda pulled a latex glove out of her purse. She didn't put it on, but used it as a barrier between her fingers as she opened the drawers on the desk. Pens, paper. No Max Factor nail polish with a distinctive pointy white cap.
Amanda said, "This doesn't take 2 people.
Will checked the galley kitchen. 2 key cards were on the counter. One was solid black. The other had a picture of a treadmill on it, probably for the gym. There was a stack of crisp bills. Will didn't touch the money, which he guessed to be around $500, all in 20s.
"Anything?"
Amanda asked. Will went behind the wet bar. Swizzle sticks, napkins, a martini shaker. A Bible with an envelope stuck between the pages. The book was old. The leather cover was worn off the corners, showing the cardboard underneath. He told Amanda, "I need your glove."
"What is it?"
She didn't hand him the glove. Instead, she wiped her palm on her skirt, then forced her hand into the latex. She opened the Bible. The envelope lay flat against the page. It had obviously been in there for a while. The paper was old. The ink had worn off the round logo in the corner. The typewritten address had grayed with time. Amanda started to close the Bible, but Will stopped her. He leaned down, squinting hard to make out the address. Will had seen his father's name enough times to recognize the words. Atlanta Jail came just as easily. He'd used one or both in almost every report he'd ever written. The postmark was faded, but the date was clear. August 15th, 1975. He said,
"This was mailed a month after I was born." "So it appears.
It's from a law firm." He recognized the scales of justice.
"Herman Centrello," she supplied.
His father's defense attorney. The man was a gun for hire. He was also the reason they were here. It was the threat of Centrello's superior courtroom performance that persuaded the Atlanta City prosecutor to offer the plea bargain of life with the possibility of parole. Will said, "Open it." In 15 years, Will had only once seen Amanda's composure crack, and even then, it was more like a fissure. For a split second, she showed something akin to dread. And then, just as quickly, the emotion was gone. The envelope was glued into the spine. She had to turn it over like a page. The glue along the flap had dried long ago. She used her thumb and forefinger to press open the envelope. Will looked inside. No letter, no note, just faded ink where some of the words had rubbed off. Amanda said, "Apparently it's nothing more than a bookmark." Then why did he keep it all these years? No luck. Sarah was back. She told them, "No nail polish in the bathroom or the bedroom. I found his diabetic kit. His syringes are in a plastic disposal box. We'll have to have the lab cut it open, but from what I could tell, there's nothing in there that doesn't belong."
"Thank you, Dr. Linton."
Amanda closed the Bible. She took out her BlackBerry again.
"Will?"
He didn't know what else to do but continue searching the bar. He used the edge of his shoe to open the bottom cabinets. More glasses. 2 ice buckets. The minibar was unlocked. Will used the toe of his shoe again. The fridge was full of vials of insulin. But nothing else. He let the door close. There were at least 2 dozen liquor bottles on the shelves behind the bar. The mirror backing showed Will's reflection. He didn't look at himself. Didn't want to fall down that rabbit hole of comparing himself to his father. He studied the colored labels instead, the shape of the bottles, the amber and gold liquids. Which was why he noticed that one of the bottles listed at a slight angle. There was something underneath, shimming it to the side. He told Amanda, "Pick up this bottle." For once, she didn't ask him why. She took the bottle off the shelf.
"It's a key."
Sarah asked, "Is it for the minibar?" Will checked the lock on the refrigerator.
"No, it's too big."
Carefully, Amanda picked up the key by the edges. The head was stepped instead of round or angled. There was a number stamped into the metal. Will said,
"That's for a Schlage factory lock."
Amanda sounded perturbed.
"I have no idea what that means."
"It's a heavy-duty deadbolt."
Will went out into the hallway. The cops were gone, but McGuire was still there. He held a bag of ice to his nose. Will said,
"I'm sorry about before." McGuire's curt nod did not indicate forgiveness.
Will asked, "What door in this hotel opens with an actual metal key?" He took his time lowering the bag of ice, sniffing back blood.
"The key cards."
Amanda interrupted him, holding up the key.
"It's to a Schlage deadbolt, heavy duty. What door in your hotel does this open?"
McGuire wasn't stupid. He got over himself fast.
"The only locks like that are in the sub-basement."
Amanda asked,
"What's down there?"
"The generators, the mechanicals, the elevator shafts."
Amanda headed toward the elevators. She told McGuire,
"Radio your security team. Tell them to meet us down there."
McGuire jogged to keep up.
"The main elevators stop in the lobby. You have to go to the second floor in the service elevator. Then use the emergency exit stairs behind the spa."
Amanda jabbed the button.
"What else is on that floor?"
"Treatment rooms, a nail suite, the pool."
The doors opened. He let Amanda on first.
"The stairs to the sub-basement are behind the gym."
27. July 15th, 1975. "Amanda," Evelyn repeated. Amanda stared down at Ulster. Her foot was still jammed into his neck. With the slightest pressure, she could crush his windpipe. "Amanda," Evelyn said.
"The girl."
The girl. Amanda stepped back. She told the patrolman,
"Take him."
The man took out his cuffs. He called dispatch on his shoulder mic, sounding as scared as Amanda had felt 10 minutes ago. She wasn't afraid now. The steeliness was back, the fury, the anger. She headed toward the house.
Wait.
Evelyn put her hand on Amanda's arm. The lower half of her face was swollen. It obviously hurt to talk, but she whispered,
"There could be someone else.
Not another girl. Another killer." Amanda found her revolver on the ground. The wooden grip was cracked. She opened the cylinder, one bullet. She looked at Evelyn, who checked her own revolver and held up 4 fingers. 5 bullets between them. That was all they had. That was all they needed. The front door was unlocked. Amanda reached in with her hand and turned on the switch. A single bulb hung from an old fixture in the ceiling. The house was shotgun style, one story with a front door that lined up to the back. There were 2 chairs in the front room. A Bible was open on one of them. A silver bowl of water was on the floor. She was reminded of Easter church services. The women would bring bowls of water and wash the men's feet. She'd washed Duke's every year since her mother died. The distant wail of a siren broke the silence. Not just one siren, 2, 3, more than she could decipher. Evelyn joined Amanda as she walked down the hall. The kitchen was straight ahead. 2 doors were on their right, 1 on the left, all closed. Evelyn indicated the first door. She gripped her revolver in her hand. She nodded that she was ready. They stood on either side of the closed door. Amanda reached down and turned the knob. She pushed open the door. Quickly, she reached in and flipped up the light switch. A floor lamp came on. There was a metal bed in the middle of the room. The mattress was soiled. Threads jutted up. Broken threads. A washstand. A sink. A chair. A bed table. On the table was a pair of nail clippers. Cuticle nips, buffer, 3 types of metal files, an emery board, tweezers. Red Max Factor nail polish with a pointy white cap. A glass vial filled with the crescent-shaped clippings of women's fingernails. Jane Delray, Mary Halston, Kitty Treadwell, Lucy Bennett. Filthy rooms, cracked plaster walls. Bare bulbs in the ceiling, animal droppings on the floor. The stench of blood and terror. This house was where he'd kept them. Evelyn gave a low hiss for her attention. She nodded toward the next door. Amanda saw the patrolman enter the front room. She didn't wait for him. They did not need his help. She stood to the side of the closed door and turned the knob. The light was already on in the room. Washstand, sink, manicure kit, red polish. Another glass vial of nail clippings. The girl was slumped against the headboard. Blood spilled in a steady stream down her abdomen. Pink foam bubbled from her mouth. Her hand was wrapped around the large knife in her chest.
Don't!
Amanda lurched forward, dropping to her knees beside the bed. She covered the girl's hand with her own.
Don't take it out.
Evelyn yelled to the patrolman.
Call an ambulance! She's still alive!
The girl's throat made a sucking sound. Air whistled around Amanda's hand. The blade was angled to the left, piercing the lung, possibly the heart. The knife was huge. The kind of weapon hunters used to skin their kill. The girl breathed. Her body was shaking. Torn threads hung from holes around her tattered lips.
It's okay,
Amanda soothed, trying to keep the knife steady as she peeled away the girl's fingers. Evelyn asked,
Is she having a seizure?
I don't know. The girl's hand dropped. The fingers twitched against the mattress. Her breath was stale, almost sour. Amanda's muscles burned as she gripped the handle of the knife, trying desperately to hold it in place. No matter what she did, blood poured steadily from the wound.
"It's all right," Amanda mumbled. "Just hold on a little bit longer."
The girl tried to blink. Pieces of eyelid stuck to her brow. Her arm reached out, fingers flexing as she tried to point to the open door.
"That's right."
Amanda felt tears streaming down her face.
"We're going to take you out of here. He's not going to hurt you anymore."
She made a noise, a sound between a breath and a word.
"We'll get you out of here."
Again she made the sound.
"What is it?"
Amanda asked.
"La."
The girl breathed.
"Va."
Amanda shook her head. She didn't understand. Evelyn got down beside her.
"What is it, sweetheart?"
"La,"
she repeated.
"La, va."
"Lover?"
Amanda asked.
"Love?"
Her head shook in a trembling nod.
"Him."
Her breath stopped. Her body went limp as the life drained out of her. Amanda couldn't hold her up anymore. Gently, she let the girl fall back onto the bed. Her eyes took on a blank stare. Amanda had never seen another person die before. The room got cold. A breeze chilled her to the bone. It felt as if a shadow hovered above them. Then, just as quickly, it was gone. Evelyn sat back on her knees. She spoke quietly.
"Lucy Bennett.
Lucy Bennett," Amanda repeated. They stared at the poor creature. Her face, her torso, her arms and legs. The horrors of the last year were writ large across her body.
"How could she love him?"
Amanda asked.
"How could she?"
Evelyn used the back of her hand to wipe away tears.
"I don't know."
Amanda stared into the dead girl's eyes. She had seen her through the window just moments ago. The image flashed into Amanda's mind like a scene from a horror movie. The girl on the bed, her hand at her chest. It was a knife she had been holding. Amanda realized that now. The sound of the sirens got louder.
"House is clear." The patrolman came up behind them. "What did you—"
He saw the body. His hand slapped to his mouth as he ran from the room, retching. Evelyn said,
"At least we were here for her."
Tires screeched in the street. Blue lights flashed.
"Maybe we brought her, I don't know, comfort?"
Amanda said,
"We were too late to save her."
"We found her," Evelyn said.
"At least we found her. At least the last few minutes of her life she was free."
"It's not enough."
"No," Evelyn said. "It'll never be enough."
The sirens wound down as the cruisers pulled up. They heard talking outside, gruff voices barking orders. The usual palaver of men taking charge. And something else. Evelyn obviously heard it too. Still, Amanda asked, "What's that noise?" 28. Present day. Susanna Ford. She knew what the noise was now. The elevators rushing up and down. She heard the wind whistling like a train, up and down, down and up, as the doctor cut the threads with a pair of office scissors.
"You're going to be okay,"
the woman said. She was obviously in charge. She'd been the first to come to Susanna's side, the only one who wasn't afraid of what she had seen. The other guys hung back. She could hear their breathing like steam pushing out of an iron. And then the doctor told one to call an ambulance, another to get a bottle of water, another to get a blanket, another to find some scissors. They jumped to obey, running off so fast that Susanna could feel the ghosts of their presence long after she could no longer hear their sneakers pounding against the floor. "You're safe," the doctor said. She put her hand to Susanna's head. She was pretty. Her green eyes were the first thing Susanna saw. They looked at her down the blade of the scissors as she carefully snipped apart the threads. She'd covered Susanna's eyes with her hand so that the light would not blind her. Her touch was so light when she cut apart Susanna's lips that she'd barely felt the metal grazing her skin. "Look at me. You're going to be okay," the woman said. Her voice was steady. She was so damn certain that Susanna believed her. And then she saw the man. Hulking, lurking. He looked different. Younger. But it was still the same guy. Still the same monster. Susanna started screaming. Her mouth opened, her throat scratched, her lungs shook. She screamed as loud as she could. The noise wouldn't stop. She screamed even when the man left. She screamed over the doctor's soothing voice. She screamed when the paramedics came. She didn't stop screaming until the doctor stuck the needle in. The drug rushed through her body. Immediate relief. Her brain calmed. Her heart slowed. She could breathe again. Taste again. See again. There was no part of her that did not feel it. Her hands, her fingers, her toes, all tingled from the rush. Release. Salvation. Oblivion. And Xana was in love all over again. 29. Present day. Wednesday. Sinatra crooned softly through the speakers in Amanda's Lexus, but Will could only hear Susanna Ford's screams. He had been so relieved to find the girl alive, he'd wanted to weep as Sarah freed the girl. His father had hurt her, he'd tried to destroy her. But Will had stopped him. He'd won. He'd finally beaten the old man. And then, Susanna had taken one look at Will and seen James Ulster come back to life. He leaned his head into his hand as he stared at the passing cars. They were on Peachtree Road, stuck in the patch of traffic near one of the many strip malls. Amanda turned down the volume on the radio. Sinatra's voice mellowed even more. She put her hand back on the wheel. The other rested in the sling that was strapped around her shoulder and waist. She said,
"It's supposed to get cold this weekend."
Her throat sounded raw, probably from talking nonstop on her BlackBerry for the last 20 minutes. Hotel security, the Atlanta Police Department, her own agents at the GBI. No one was going to skate on missing the fact that Ulster's morning trips to the gym were simply an excuse for him to gain access to the stairs that led to the sub-basement. How many times had he gone down there to hurt her? How many opportunities to stop him had been missed? The girl had been held at least a week. She was dehydrated, starved, mutilated. God knows what else. Amanda said,
"Of course you can't trust the weatherman. Never could."
Will still didn't answer. The car accelerated as they drove past Amanda's condo. The Regal Park complex was nice, but paled in comparison to its neighbors. They were in the Buckhead Finger Bowl, Habersham Road,
Andrews Drive, Peachtree Battle. Residences on these streets started at $2 million and jumped sharply north. The area contained the most expensive real estate in the city. The zip code was listed among the top 10 wealthiest in the country.
We could use some rain.
Will looked at the side-view mirror as they approached the heart of Buckhead. An Atlanta PD cruiser was following them. Amanda hadn't told him why, and Will couldn't bring himself to ask her. His breathing was shallow. His palms were clammy. There was no explanation for his feelings, just that he knew, deep in his soul, that something bad was about to happen. Amanda slowed the car. Horns blared as she took an illegal turn onto West Paces Ferry Road. Her lips parted, but only to take a breath. He waited for her to say something more about the weather, but her mouth remained closed, her eyes on the road ahead of them. Will stared out the window again. The dread was making him feel sick. She'd already surprised him once today. It was a cruel thing to do. The shock had almost killed him. What else did she have planned? Amanda pointed to a 60s-style house with fake terra columns. The governor's mansion.
A tornado cut straight through here a few months before you were born. Took the roof off, cut through Perry Homes.
Will wasn't going to take the bait.
What will happen to his body?
She didn't ask whom he meant.
No one will claim him. He'll be buried in a pauper's grave.
He has money.
Do you want it?
No. He didn't want anything from his father. Will would live on the streets again before he took a dime of the man's blood money. Amanda slowed down for another turn. Will finally asked the question.
Where are we going?
She signaled for the turn.
Don't you know?
He studied the street sign. The X in the middle gave it away. Tuxedo Road. They were in the wealthiest part of the wealthiest section. $2 million would probably be just enough to cover property taxes for one estate.
No, she asked.
Will shook his head. She made the turn. The car traveled several more yards before she said,
Your juvenile records are sealed.
I know.
You don't have your father's name.
Or my mother's. Will loosened the knot in his tie. He couldn't get enough air. That reporter with the AJC, Faith's ex-boyfriend, he called you.
Because I worked on the original case.
Amanda glanced at him.
I'm the one who put your father in jail the first time.
No, you didn't. Butch Bonney and
Rick Landry.
She braked for a steep curve.
They were the homicide detectives. I was in what was euphemistically called vagina crimes. If it went into a vagina or came out of one, that was my case.
She glanced over again, but only so she could enjoy his reaction.
Evelyn and I did all the work. Butch and Landry took all the credit. Don't be so shocked. It was a common occurrence. I hazard to say it's still going on.
Will couldn't answer even if he wanted to. It was too much to take on board. Too much information. Instead, he stared at the mansions rolling by. Castles. Mausoleums. Finally, he managed. Why didn't you tell me?
Because it didn't matter. It was just another case. I've worked on lots of cases over the years. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been doing this job an awfully long time.
He unbuttoned his collar.
You should have told me.
She was honest for once.
I probably should have told you a lot of things.
The car slowed again. She turned on her blinker and pulled into a long driveway. A Tudor-style house stretched out the length of half a football field. The front entrance, peering down a rolling green lawn, twice as long as the house was wide. The turf was crisscrossed in a checkered pattern. Azaleas and hostas spilled in rings around the tall oaks. Will asked, Who lives here? Amanda ignored the question as she pulled up to the closed gate. The scrollwork was painted a gloss black that matched the brick and wrought iron fence ringing the property. She pressed the intercom button on the security panel. A full minute passed before a woman's voice said, "Yes."
"It's Amanda Wagner."
Static came through the intercom, then the sound of a long buzz. The gate started to swing open. Amanda mumbled,
"Swell digs,"
as she drove up the curving driveway. "Who lives here?" Will repeated.
"You really don't recognize the place?"
Will shook his head, but there was something familiar about the house. The rolling green hill. Tumbling down headfirst, grass stains streaking his pants. The driveway laced across the front of the house in a gentle arc. Amanda pulled into the circular drive. A large fountain was in the center. Water slapped against a concrete urn. Amanda parked the Lexus parallel to the heavy wooden front doors. They were oversized, at least 12 feet tall, but fit with the scale of the building. Will checked over his shoulder. The APD cruiser was 30 yards down, hanging back at the end of the driveway. Exhaust trailed from its tailpipe. Amanda adjusted the sling on her arm.
"Button your collar and fix your tie."
She waited until he complied, then got out of the car. Will's shoes crunched on the pea gravel driveway. Water splashed from the fountain. He looked down the vista of the front yard. Had he rolled down that hill? His mind could only recall fragments. None of them felt happy.
"Let's go."
Amanda held her purse by the straps as she walked up the front steps. The door opened before she could ring the bell. An older woman stood in the shadow of the door. She was the prototypical Buckhead Betty, extremely thin, in the way of all wealthy women, with a tight face that had obviously been stretched back onto her skull. Her makeup was thick. Her hair was stiff with hairspray. She wore a red skirt with hose and high heels. Her white silk blouse had tiny pearl buttons at the wrist. A red cardigan was draped around her narrow shoulders. She didn't bother with formalities. "He's waiting for you in his office." The foyer was almost as large as the lobby of the Four Seasons. Another wide staircase. Another two-story entrance. Dark wooden beams arched into the white plaster ceiling. The chandelier was wrought iron. The furniture was sturdy-looking. The oriental carpet showed a mixture of dark blues and burgundies. "This way," the woman said, leading them down a long corridor that ran the width of the house. Their footsteps echoed on the slate tiles. Will couldn't help but look into each room they passed. He felt like a light bulb kept flashing on in his head, the dining room with its large mahogany table, the delicate china hanging on the walls in the front parlor, the game room with its billiard table that Will had never been allowed to touch. They finally stopped at a closed door. She turned the knob, opening it as she knocked. "They're here."
"They?"
Henry Bennett stood from his desk. He was impeccably dressed, his blue suit tailored to his body. His mouth opened, then closed. He shook his head, as if to clear his vision. Will almost did the same. He hadn't seen his uncle in almost 30 years. Henry was just out of law school when Lucy was murdered. He tried to keep a connection with his sister's only child. But by law, an unmarried man could not adopt an infant. Henry had lost interest by the time Will turned 6, which put Will right at the age when no one wanted him. Even Henry. Will had never laid eyes on his uncle again. Until now. And he had no idea what he was supposed to say. Apparently, neither did Henry.
"What the?"
He was visibly angry. His mouth twisted in disgust as he asked Amanda,
"What game are you playing?"
Yet again, Will felt a cold sweat come on. He looked down at the floor, wishing he could disappear. If Amanda thought this was going to be a happy homecoming, she was dead wrong.
Wilbur? Henry prodded.
Amanda took over.
Hank, I need to ask you some questions.
It's Henry,
he corrected. He obviously didn't like surprises, just as he obviously did not like Amanda. He couldn't even look at her. Will cleared his throat. He told his uncle,
I'm sorry that we showed up like this.
Henry stared at him. Will felt an odd sense of déjà vu. Even after all these years, Henry shared similar features with his dead sister. Same mouth, same high cheekbones. He had all of her secrets, too, all the stories about her childhood, her parents, her life. And Will had a thin file that told him nothing more than that Lucy Bennett had been brutally murdered.
Well, the Buckhead Betty said, this is awkward.
She extended her hand to Will.
I'm Elizabeth Bennett, like in Austin, only older.
Her smile was as practiced as the joke.
I suppose I'm your aunt.
Will didn't know what else to do but shake her hand. Her grip was firmer than he expected. Will Trent. She raised an eyebrow, as if the name surprised her. Amanda asked,
How long have you been married?
To Henry, she laughed. Too long.
She turned to her husband, saying, Let's not be rude, sweetheart. These people are our guests. Something passed between them, the sort of muted, private exchange that old married couples hone over the years.
You're right.
Henry pointed to the two chairs in front of his desk.
Sit down, boy. Would you like a drink? I need a drink. I'm fine,
Amanda said. Instead of sitting in front of the desk, she sat on the couch. As usual, she stayed on the edge of the cushion, not leaning back. The leather was old. It creaked under her slight weight.
Wilbur,
Henry asked. He was standing beside a cart with a full bar.
No, thank you.
Will sat beside Amanda on the couch. The frame was so low that he could easily rest his elbows on his knees. His leg wanted to shake. He felt nervous, like he'd done something wrong. Henry dropped a piece of ice into a glass. He picked up a bottle of scotch and unscrewed the cap. Elizabeth sat down in the matching leather chair. Like Amanda, she sat on the edge of the seat, back straight. She opened a silver box on the side table. She took out a cigarette and lighter. Will couldn't remember the last time he'd been around a smoker. The house was large enough to absorb the smell, but the pungent odor of burning tobacco filled his nostrils as the woman lit the cigarette.
Now,
Henry pulled over one of the chairs from his desk.
I assume you came here for a reason. Is it money? I have to warn you, all my cash is tied up right now. The market's been volatile.
Will would have preferred a knife in his groin.
No, I don't want your money.
Amanda said,
James Ulster is dead.
Henry's lips pursed. He got very still.
I'd heard he got out. 2 months ago,
Amanda confirmed. Henry leaned back in his chair. He crossed his leg over his knee. His glass rested lightly on his palm. He smoothed out the arm of his suit jacket. He said,
Wilbur, I know that despite Ulster's terrible actions, he was still your father. Are you holding up?
Yes, sir.
Will had to loosen his tie again. The air was stifling. He wanted to leave, especially when the room turned silent. No one seemed to know what to say. Elizabeth took a deep drag off her cigarette. There was an amused smile on her lips, as if she was enjoying their discomfort.
Well,
Henry said,
as I said, your father was a very bad man. I think we're all relieved to learn of his demise.
Will nodded.
Yes, sir.
Elizabeth tapped the cigarette against the tray.
And how is your life, young man? Are you married?
Do you have children?
Will felt a tingling in his arm. He wondered if he was having a heart attack.
I'm doing well.
What about you, Hank?
Amanda asked.
I saw when you made partner, 3 years out of law school, and you rocketed to the top of the firm. Old Treadwell certainly took care of you.
Henry finished his scotch. He put the glass on the table.
I'm retired now.
Amanda spoke to Elizabeth.
It must be lovely having him home.
She held the cigarette to her lips.
I cherish every moment.
Another muted exchange, this time between Amanda and Elizabeth Bennett. Will reached up to unbutton his shirt collar. Amanda touched his elbow to stop him. Elizabeth took another drink.